Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I want to mourn the old trees and tell them that we love them.
I've looked at clear cuts and burnt forest and I've felt outraged.
We are the crowning glory of God's creation, and all of nature was made for us. Nature is more productive because of us, not less.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And away we go.
It's the Wretched Radio mail call delivery bag Q&A infotainment nationwide extravaganza featuring your voicemails, correspondences, communiques, dispatches, memorandums, and missives.
Any special message for all the kids watching at home?
What we need right now is a clear message to the people of this country.
You have 1,200 messages.
That is a bit above average.
Now here's your host, Todd Freakishly Tall Friel.
The mail is here!
Indeed. Send your emails, comments, conundrums, snarks, or in this instance, stories to idea@wretched.org. A story sent in from somebody who sent an email to idea@wretched.org. Sorry. Mom visits her son for dinner, who's shacking up with a girl roommate. During the course of the meal, his mother couldn't help but notice how pretty his roommate was. She'd been suspicious of a relationship between the two, and this had made her more curious. Over the course of the evening, while watching the two interact, she started to wonder if there was more between him and his roommate than met the eye. Reading his mom's thoughts, the son said, "I know what you must be thinking, but I assure you, we are just roommates." About a week later, his roommate came to him saying, "Ever since your mother came to dinner, I can't find the silver plate. You don't suppose she took it, do you?" He said, "Well, I doubt it, but I'll send her a note. Dear mother, I'm not saying that you took our silver plate. I'm not saying you didn't take the silver plate, but the fact remains that it's been missing ever since you were here for dinner. Love, your son." Dear son, I'm not saying that you do sleep with your roommate. I'm not saying that you don't sleep with her, but the fact remains that if she were sleeping in her own bed, she would have found the silver plate by now under the pillow. Love, Mom. idea@wretched.org. Several people asking, is it okay to live with somebody the opposite gender? Well, does it have to be a sin? No. And I'm, of course, not talking about married couples. I'm talking about roommates. Would I say it's a definitive, absolute, positive sin? I don't know. You can come pretty close, I think, because of the lack of wisdom and the testimony that it gives to the world. But it's awfully close. It's just foolishness. Really? You know, I've got a problem with pornography. Now, I'm just going to go to some of these sites. I'm not going to click on the buttons that I normally would. I'm just going to have them up on my screen. That's all. You know, I've kicked drinking, so I'm just going to go to a bar and have a Coke. Not good. Not wise. Don't do it. Furthermore, it's the testimony issue. What does the world, really think that you're not sleeping? Do they think that when they see you walking out of the apartment, really? Our Christian testimony is precious because it represents our King. Don't compromise it because of convenience or because of budgetary issues. Frankly, if you do that, the only person you're fooling is yourself. idea@wretched.org. Idea. That kind of reminded me of the Joseph story, but then it had a little bit of a twist at the end, if you don't mind me saying so. So that story was almost biblical. Todd, here's another one. I'm not going to say who the person is because this person has a friend who is engaged and claiming it's okay for us as an engaged couple to be touching one another. Here are the categories: hugging, touching, massaging, holding hands. Is it okay for an engaged couple to do that? Good question. I think it's one that every young couple should actually wrangle through themselves. Might I suggest you do it by remembering the biblical categories for relationships between males and females? What are they? I can only think of three: parent, child, father, daughter, mother, son, husband, wife, and a brother or sister. So you've got parental relations, spousal, marriage relations, sibling relationships. Here's how I think you figure out if you should be hugging and touching and massaging your fiancé. I can't find a biblical category for fiancé that tells me that this is a relationship that the Bible recognizes. It does not mean that being engaged has no meaning. It does mean that the Bible doesn't create a category that says, if you are in this sort of relationship with somebody of the opposite sex, you can do these activities. So I'm constrained to identify the three categories the Bible gives to me, which is parental, spousal, and sibling relationships, and ask, what does the Bible permit or endorse in those categories? Because until your relationship with that girl or guy is in the married category, husband and wife, then I have to assume that you can't be doing anything that would be sexual or that would stir sexual feelings. Would a parent do something romantic with a child? Well, not in the Christian church. I know the world these days is certainly giving it a push to promote that. But no, the Bible doesn't. Would you give a romantic kiss to your son or daughter? Oh, all right. Well, if she's not your son or daughter, or the person that you are engaged to is not your son or daughter, then you can't be doing romantic kisses. Can you do a romantic kiss with your wife? Yes. Is that person your husband or wife? No. All right, so you can't get away with it under that category. Would you have a romantic smooch with your sibling? No. All right, so with that in mind, let's work through the categories that were presented. Hugging, touching, massaging, holding hands. All right. Can there be non-sexual hugs? I think so. I mean, I sure hope so.
Side hugs, maybe.
Yeah, well, side hugs. But if you're holding on tight for an extended period of time, that's probably more romantic. And there's not a biblical category that you fit into that gives you permission to do that. A long romantic embrace is for a husband and wife. And if you're not in that category, you don't get to do that act. What about massaging? Okay, could a brother walk behind his sister and go, you look uptight, rubber neck or shoulders? Sure, I suppose that could happen. Suppose?
Maybe.
But massaging, beyond that, furthermore, it's not your sister. And let's be honest, and it's okay. You knowing, being aware of your romantic inclinations, that's a part of making a decision to get married to somebody. But it can so quickly cross a line, can it? So is it wisdom to do that? Kissing, we already talked about that. What about holding hands? Would you ever hold hands with your parent? I think you could. Now, I realize in our culture that kind of stops at a certain age. Go to Europe, and it manifests itself in a different way. They lock arms there. They don't hold hands. They lock arms, something we wouldn't do in this culture. So could a 20-year-old daughter hold the hand of her 50-year-old father? Yeah, I think so. I think siblings could even hold hands. So could a couple that is dating or fiancéed with one another, I guess the word would be engaged, could they hold hands? I think so, because the Bible gives you permission to do that. Beyond that, I think that you need to be very, very careful, because the Bible doesn't say you fit into a category that gives you permission to do these acts. And all of that, as puritanical as that may sound, it should cause you to be excited for marriage. It should shorten up that engagement period so that you say I do and you get on with business of cohabitating together, sharing expenses together, having bank accounts together, which, by the way, was another question that was recently asked. What about bank accounts? Is it okay to have a separate joint or a separate bank account? And the answer is, yeah, it's okay. But I would suggest to you, if there is not enough trust there to have a joint bank account, you've probably got bigger issues than accounting. If you're engaged and you don't think that you can trust that person with your money, first of all, you're failing to remember that's no longer your money. It will become our money because it's a one flesh relationship. And if you don't think that you can trust that person with our money, I would say you better put the brakes on and get that figured out. Get to the root of that deal. If you're married and you don't feel comfortable doing that, something is off. That needs to be fixed. The solution isn't separate accounts. The solution is fixing why there isn't that trust there, which leads to, look at us, we've got a theme here. My fiance and I are getting married in December. Congratulations. Long story short, I have freakishly large fingers. It is nigh impossible to find a band that will fit me. We're considering a tattooed wedding band as a solution.
Hmm.
What would you say? I would say I've got to watch out for my preference because I've never said that a tattoo is necessarily a sin. I'm just not a fan because of what I think that they speak, even if it's something pretty. It just, there's still, I think, a cultural air of rebellion about it that is automatically assumed. I admit to you, I bring that to the table. But I think that a band says something. There's imagery. This is covenantal imagery that is involved. It's unbreakable. It is lasting. It is something that is solid. It speaks of my commitment to this person, that I value this relationship. Does a tattoo do that? Not so sure. Plus, not so sure it gives the right testimony that a wedding band does, at least in our culture, at this time. So, freakishly fat-fingered fellow, keep shopping! This is Wretched Radio. If any of you have been looking for a reason to sponsor your very own Tomorrow Club in Eastern Europe, perhaps this story from Max, the national director in Ukraine, will inspire you to visit tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Arsene, just 5 years old, escaped his home and came to the camp. His grandmother would not let him. She was cursing all Christians. His grandmother, sadly, passes away. So he kept coming. Not only that, he brought his parents and they repented. So this family gives the house where the grandmother used to live to the church. And that's where the Tomorrow Club meets.
And that story is not a one-off. Families getting saved constantly through the Tomorrow Clubs in Eastern Europe. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club? 30 disciples, $30 per month. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Without sounding too much like a mafia don, here's an offer you can't refuse. Wretched would like to give you up to 20 copies of our evangelistic booklet, What Time is Purple? And Other Intriguing Questions on the Road Trip to Truth. You heard me right. We want to give you these beautiful, thorough gospel booklets. But there are two strings attached. Well, really tiny strings, more like fishing line. Actually, thread would be better. You pay for shipping only, and you promise to give them away to the atheist or agnostic in your life who believes that evolution disproves the existence of God. Go to wretched.org/purple today and get your copies of What Time is Purple. It's also a great idea for the student in your life who's heading off to school or anyone who doubts that the Bible is true. Get your copies of What Time is Purple at wretched.org/purple. And thanks very much to the generosity of our gospel partners who make this giveaway possible.
Couldn't say it any better than Michael Woolworth from Bible League International.
The world will drill wells and provide food and shelter. Those are very important causes.
Yes.
We smile favorably upon those. But getting God's word to believers half a world away, people you won't meet this side of eternity, that's on us as God's people.
Ain't nothing wrong with digging a well, but it is only the Christian church that can provide living water. Bible League International for decades, delivering Bibles to believers who have made a profession of faith, believers who have studied the basics of the Christian faith, are then given living water in the Word, a Bible, for just $5 per Bible. You could deliver a Bible to a believer overseas through Bible League International. Might it be possible you could send, say, 6 per month? Please call Bible League at 1-800-YES-WORD.
Does your church have a passion to see souls saved, but you don't know where to start? HeartsForTheLost.com. Hearts for the Lost assists local pastors and church congregations by helping them equip the saints with biblical principles for personal evangelism. They will fly out to your church to put on an evangelism seminar, and then they will go out into the streets with you to put what you've learned into practice. And it's all free. To learn more or schedule your conference, go to HeartsForTheLost.com.
important dates in Christian history. 1793. William Carey sails as a missionary to India. In the next 40 years, he would oversee more Bible translations than had previously been produced in all of Christian history. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Idea at wretched.org. If you want to send a question, comment, conundrum, or snark, let's get to it. Shall we? Where are my cheaters? There they are. Oh, lots of emails on the police officer, Dealey Bob. If you recall last week, a police officer, I think he was in D.C., senior officer, was asked to train a Goyle. And he said, I think the Bible keeps me from doing that. My response was, I don't know that the Bible says it's an absolute sin for a man to ever be alone, regardless of the period of time. I don't think we can say it's a sin. Is it wise? That's a completely different issue. And I think we basically left it at that and said that I don't think we can make a law where there is no law. But wisdom says the Billy Graham / Mike Pence rule is very wise indeed. Having said that, is it ever wrong for a man in business to be in any sort of meeting with a woman? I don't think we can make that law. What if it? You're the manager and you're about to terminate the employee, or you're going to hire. You want it has to be closed door because you don't want people. Is that a sin? Are people going to think that you're up to something? Could you be vulnerable? The answer is, well, actually, you could be because you don't have somebody around who can see it. The door isn't open. You could be. But at some point, we still need to function in our culture. We want to be wise as serpents. But I don't think we want to make laws where there are no laws. Nevertheless, received a lot of emails from folks saying, my husband is a police officer. And if his department is at all the same, they can spend months with their rookie doing everything together, and not just inside the patrol car, but also in the station writing reports, having lunch, basically spending their entire working hours together, and it can be during day or night hours, so there's lots of opportunity for things to happen. And in fact, those things do happen often. There is a very inevitable close relationship that forms between those two people. They're, after all, trusting each other with their lives. That is a great observation. That... I don't think any of us should be so self-deceived to think, not I. Now, if I saw, let's just say, there's a local pastor, and he does the chaplaincy, and he's riding around with the police every Thursday night, and he gets assigned to a woman, would I automatically go, that guy is foolish because he's going to end up having an affair because of how close? No, I wouldn't do that. Would I say it's wise? Yeah. What does our culture think? I'm thinking just about the testimony level. If in this culture, the world, not the church, but the world saw a pastor driving around in the front seat with a female officer at the helm, would they think, aha, there's sin going on there? What about church members? How vulnerable am I to this? Now, that's just once a week and on occasion with a female. What about the police officer who's got to be with this person all the time? Trusting this person with their life, it brings new complexity. Let's not make laws where there are no laws, but let's be really wise about this stuff because none of us is above any sort of temptation. So we just don't want to be foolish. Idea at wretched.org. Idea at wretched.org. A reminder. Let's have some grace amongst one another when it comes to some of these issues. It might be pretty clear-cut to you, but it might not be to everybody else. We can be tolerant of one another. I mean, really tolerant. Not say you're tolerant and then yell at them for not agreeing with you. We can actually be tolerant because this falls maybe under that gray area where we can have a difference of opinion on this. Right? See, here's the problem. With Adiaphora, the gray area issues. It doesn't feel like a gray area. I know what I'm thinking. No, I know this to be true. Let's just use Halloween for a moment, shall we? You're convinced it's Satan's holiday, and anybody who participates in it in any way, shape, or form is a sin. You believe that. Now, just for a moment, remember, I'm not talking about Halloween. Talking about the issue. Let's just say that it's not a sin, but it's a preference issue. And on the other side, you don't think that it's really that big of a deal. You don't put them in the satanic costumes, the demonic stuff, the blood and guts and gore business. You avoid all of that. So it's not a sin. To you, I would say, let's say that it is. You see, you're persuaded. And so you feel like, no, this isn't that way. You say it's not a sin, but it is. I'm telling you it is. That's always the challenge to these issues. What does this force? So then what is the point of this Romans 14, 2 Corinthians 8 through 10 admonition from Paul? Hey, be careful how you go about the business of judging one another. There's some issues. We can have disagreements on this stuff. What's the point if we feel so persuaded by it? What does it force us to do? It forces us to sit down with one another at the very least and work through it. So, for instance, let's just stick with Halloween. And I know some people are getting annoyed with me. I'm not making a commentary on Halloween, although I've said it before. I don't think it's a sin to go trick-or-treating without the satanic clothing to get candy from the neighbors. That's my take. You disagree. But that's not my point in all of this. We're talking about the issue of Mitteldinger, the gray area stuff. What does it cause us to do? All right, Tony, you believe that, which side do you want on this deal? Do you think Halloween is Satan's holiday, or do you think it's fine?
Nah, it's okay. I'll go with the okay.
It's a sin, all right? So now, okay. I think that it's an absolute sin. So yep. I hear that you've got the grandkids getting dressed up to go out for Halloween. Yep. Now I'm going to, instead of just going, oh, the Verkennis family, I knew they weren't Christians. I knew it. They let the kids go out for Halloween. Instead of doing that, hey, Tony.
Hey.
What are you doing for Reformation Day?
Well, after church, we're going to take the kids out trick-or-treating.
Now, I've got a choice right there. What? You say that you believe in the Reformation, and you're participating in Harry Potter's favorite day? What's the matter with you? Well, I could talk like that face-to-face to somebody, or I could say, so you're going to take the kids out. What does that look like? Like when you say you're going out for Halloween, what are you doing?
Well, I take the kids to, you know, friends, family places so they can load up on candy and share with their grandpa.
Uh-huh. Do you slaughter any pigs to sacrifice the blood to a demon?
You know, we tried that last year, but it just got so messy.
I see. When I talk through it and I suddenly hear somebody's heart on the issue and they explain the situation, maybe some of the details that are involved, or maybe they say, you know what, we're increasingly convinced about this and convicted about this, and, you know, we're kind of working toward putting an end to it because we really used to do a whoop-de-doo. It used to be much darker in our house. We've gotten rid of all of that stuff, but we've still held on to the candy thing because with the kids, and you start to just feel, it's like, oh, okay, I know you, I'm talking to you about, I'm understanding, I get where you're coming from. It doesn't mean that we compromise suddenly on essential theology or even secondary theological positions. You can still contend for those things. But when it comes to these differences of opinion about a police officer riding with a female rookie, with a Halloween business, it could be other issues, movies, the content, the smoking, whatever area it happens to be, the choice of car, the choice of home, sitting down to learn makes such a difference. I think the car thing is really helpful. Somebody in your congregation, they pull into the parking lot, and they've got themselves a car that you have determined that's just not a car that a Christian should be driving. All right? And you're convinced of that. That car is over the line. So now you can report that person to the pastor, try to get church discipline going, approach him and go, you're sinning by driving that fill in the blank. Or you could say, hey, want to catch lunch? I would love a ride in your new car. Let's go to lunch. When you're at lunch, you could say, so tell me about the car. And suddenly the person goes, yeah, you know, I'm kind of uncomfortable in that thing, but my job requires that I tote customers around. And the firm that I work for, they insist that the car is of a certain level because of the impact that it will have for sales. So I get a stipend. Is that what it's called? I get reimbursed for part of it. And it's what I use mostly for work because it's a part of my job. And if I don't, it becomes an issue. I could lose my job. I could lose my income. And I'd have to find another gig that doesn't pay as well, which means I'd give less to the church. So I'm kind of uncomfortable with it, but there it is. Oh, well, that's different now, isn't it? If nothing else, recognizing differences of opinion on these gray areas should force us to at least sit down and get it. Am I saying that you could never say to the person, you know, I heard what you're saying. Have you considered this, though? Have you pondered that? Hey, let's take a look at this in 1 Corinthians 82. What do you think about that? And you could still talk through these things with them and try to persuade. It's okay to continue to try to persuade. But if we, in these gray areas, which I know they're difficult because you have such a passion about it inside. No, I know that guitars and drums are sinful. I know it. It's really hard to do this. I get that. But this forces us to the table on issues that the Bible doesn't speak specifically about to at least converse with one another, and maybe love will overlook a multitude of sins. We can work through the issues together, and ultimately we can get along because we're not compromising on unity issues, the essentials of the faith, or theological issues. We are simply accommodating one another, living with one another as we both grow in sanctification so that we can live in harmony and love with one another. Easy? Uh-uh. But the system is absolutely brilliant. This is Wretched Radio.
The Mission Ball is genius in its simplicity. It is a soccer ball covered with a thorough law and gospel presentation. Great way to draw a crowd, make a connection with people, and ultimately create opportunities to proclaim Christ. And the Mission Ball is now available in 38 different languages. Over 100,000 have been used in 91 countries so far. If you're able to help spread the word with the Mission Ball, go to themissionball.org. Themissionball.org. This is Wretched Radio. Hi, I'm Tony Verkennis. If you have your prayer list out, an 8-year-old boy told his Muslim relatives how much he enjoyed a church choir. He had no idea it would cause them to attack his family. The 7th and youngest child, a 54-year-old Lizaya Nakaiza, widowed since September of last year, didn't know that his family was keeping their faith secret. They live in the Wakiso district in central Uganda near the capital of Kampala. Word began to spread that relatives of her late husband were planning to punish her for leaving them, and they did. They struck on June 20th. Thankfully, they destroyed only the house. The mom and her kids escaped through the back door and walked for 2 hours before arriving at the church compound for sanctuary. Her pastor, unidentified obviously for security reasons, told Morning Star News that he learned of the extent of the destruction of Nakaiza's home from one of their neighbors the following day. It's basically gone. 5 cows, 6 sheep were killed. Iron sheets pulled down, windows and doors destroyed. The family's now living in an undisclosed location, but that's not sustainable. They are fearful for their lives. Even the church is at risk from the woman's Muslim relatives. Our church is still too small to support the family. Nakaiza is offering to wash clothes or work in gardens in order to earn enough for basic necessities. Her children range in age from 33 to 8. She said that in July, her oldest child, Lucia, who is married to a Muslim man, also put her faith in Christ. When her husband found out about her conversion last month, he drove her and their 2 kids from their homes. In July, another widow in central Uganda was also forced to flee her home after receiving Islamic threats when area Muslims discovered that she was a Christian. Oddly, Uganda's constitution and other laws provide for religious freedom, including the right to propagate your faith and to convert from one faith to another. Muslims, by the way, make up no more than 12% of Uganda's population, higher concentrations in eastern areas of the country. We need to seriously be praying for our brothers and sisters. An update: a Baptist pastor kidnapped last month in Nigeria, released over the weekend. His family and Christian leaders came up with the ransom. Muslim Fulani herdsmen in Kaduna State abducted the Reverend Elisha Noma and held him for 2 weeks before the ransom was received, just over $8,000 in U.S. money. The 60-year-old pastor of the Baptist Church identified the kidnappers as armed herdsmen. He has been receiving medical treatment for injuries while in captivity, broken hand, cuts, and burns with scarring to his head and face. While he was being beaten and tortured, the family could listen to his cries over their phones, a way to compel them to pay the ransom. In August alone, more than 40 pastors in Nigeria were either kidnapped or suffered some form of violence from herdsmen or Boko Haram terrorists, which is why the country ranks 12th on Open Doors' World Watch list. And we are praying for our brothers and sisters. More Wretched Radio straight ahead. I'm Tony Verkennis. Yeah.
books of the Bible. Paul wrote the second letter to the Thessalonians to further encourage and instruct them in the face of persecution. Some Thessalonians feared that they had missed the Lord's return. Paul reminds them that God will punish those who persecute the church, and he will be faithful to return for his people. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Oh, boy. This is Wretched Radio. Send your emails to idea@wretched.org. This one might surprise you a wee bit. Harold asking the question, what texts in Scripture say that pedophilia is wrong and is a sin? Go. You don't have one, do you? That's because there is not an explicit verse that talks about the subject. That means when it comes to discerning what is right, wrong, good, bad, evil, or kind, we need to use implicit verses. This is how we determine worldviews. First of all, lose your presuppositions, your pre-understandings, really. My pre-understandings, what I think about pedophilia, wicked, disgusting, just the sign of a culture that is totally depraved. Okay, that's what I think about it. But I am willing as a Christian to set that aside for a moment to study what the Bible has to say about the subject because I don't want to bring any sort of impulses that I have toward the subject. That's how I feel. I'm best I can. I'm setting that aside. So I lose my pre-understandings. Then I take a look at what are the explicit verses that talk about my subject. And I don't think that you're going to find a Bible verse that says pedophilia is a sin. I don't think that you've got that. So now my next category is going to be implicit verses. What does the Bible say about this subject? And I think actually the Bible has much to say about this, but we have to kind of piece this together. We start in the garden. When is intimacy appropriate? One man, one woman. All right, so now I know that if I am going to fornicate, it has to be in the context of marriage. Otherwise, fornication is a sin. So right now this is culturally, right now, an adult can't get married to a child. Therefore, any sort of intimate act is a sin. So I can get that, can I? There's another Bible verse that I would ask you to consider putting together that would fall in the implicit text, and that would be Romans 1:31. The Bible talks about natural affections. We see this in nature, and we see it also, I think, even in age issues, that boys and girls, that it's natural that they're attracted. Even without the Bible, you just take a look at bodily functions, and it's like, well, that's natural. That's how that should work. That's what that's for. Those go together like that. That's a natural sort of thing. But there's also natural affections. The Bible teaches that having desires that are just not in your category, it's not natural. Again, implicit. An 80-year-old being attracted to an 8-year-old. Would you say that's natural? There's something unnatural about that. Because it just doesn't seem to, there's something even intuitive about that. So I would say, without natural affections, is somebody who's attracted to something that's wrong. Don't we agree that an adult with a child is wrong? Now, I get it. You're thinking, well, 16, 17, when is an adult? It's an arbitrary standard. I get that. I'm just trying to make the case from some implicit texts here. Furthermore, consider Matthew 18. Jesus is talking about little children, and he's talking about how precious they are to him. And if you hurt one of these little ones, now, I know that this is designed to be talking about believers, but it can't be a correct comparison if there isn't truth in the standard. In other words, if you're going to use a comparison that this is like that, the this has to be true or the that isn't true. So the this in this instance is little children, actual small kids, they're precious to God. Therefore, God's children, they're precious. Hurt them, and it's like you're hurting a little child. Does pedophilia hurt a little one? I think that we would say, yeah. Yeah, they do. Now, that's three implied verses on this subject. That's not where we end with designing and defining a worldview. I lose my pre-understandings. I look for the explicit verses. I didn't have any. I've got my implicit verses. Boy, it's pointing toward wrong. Hold on. There's more categories here. What does church history have to say about this? What has been the understanding throughout church history? I don't think you're going to find anybody credible who even hints that this is acceptable behavior. So I've got, now remember, church history isn't Bible, but nevertheless, it's not. I can still glean from that. So church history tells me, ugh. Now I know in pagan cultures, they went, fine by us, doesn't make any difference, because the powerful are the ones who get to determine whatever they want to do. Didn't make any difference. Isn't that funny how these progressives are on the wrong side of history? What else do I consider? Testimony. What does this say about my testimony? In my culture, at my time, if I'm having a relationship with a child, what is that going to say about my relationship with Jesus Christ? I think it's pretty safe yet. As a rule, people are going to go, what? What about the gospel? That's another category. What does the gospel speak to this? How do I take this idea that Jesus died for sinners? God loves to save dirty people. How do I apply that? That has been done for me. Well, I think the implication in this instance is, why would I want to do something that would hurt somebody? Clearly, this hurts a child who does not have the adult level of thinking and knowledge in order to rightly participate in this on any cognitive or emotional level that is fully functioning. Why would I want to hurt somebody when the gospel is all about helping? The gospel is all about flourishing, not harming. Now, I return to my presupposition or my pre-understandings. Is there anything from those pre-understandings that I bring now into the conversation about pedophilia? I just happen to think it's icky. Well, I've already covered that with unnatural affection, so I think I'm justified and warranted in that. I think it harms a kid. Yep, we see that with Jesus and Matthew talking about don't harm these little kids. Don't harm my spiritual children, and don't harm, because you shouldn't be harming these little kids. I think my pre-understandings now are justified. Typically in my pre-understandings, I'm going to find any objections to this. So I'm going to find objections like maybe this was my last category, by the way, objections. Well, there's it's arbitrary. 16, 18, 24, whatever. Who says what a child is? Fair enough. But I think we can have some agreement at some level, can't we? And I think as a society, I get to call on culture at this moment and say, how old does somebody need to be to do something that is less damaging? Voting. Do we let 12-year-olds vote? No, we've agreed 18. Owning a gun. 18. Serving in the military. 18. Determining one's own gender. 3. Okay, I can't use that because that's what people are pushing for. But I can actually use the argument. Wait a second. You're telling me that you're going to let a kid determine his or her own gender at the age of 3, which is what some people are pushing for in Great Britain. I got the story here someplace. Somewhere in Great Britain, they're saying, hey, the age of 3, it's just fine if a kid determines a gender. And yet, we wait until they're 18 for these other lesser decisions. Got it right here. Children as young as 3 could be helped to change gender by doctors on the basis of just a Skype phone call under a plan being considered by the NHS. The Gender Identity Clinic will prescribe hormone backing blocking drugs to children that are a couple of years out of diapers. Huh. So, 21 to drink. You got to be a legal smoker. 18 in Great Britain. 16 to start driving a car, but 3 to determine your gender. The world's not consistent, but I can still bring that into my argument of making the worldview that pedophilia is a wicked thing to do to a child, because as a culture, we determine there are some things kids should be doing and some things that children shouldn't be doing. And being intimate with somebody who is older, especially, is a double whammy. And so that is how then I ultimately form my worldview. This is what I do with the subject of pedophilia. And that is the process that you should follow regarding any worldview issue. Idea@wretched.org. Idea@wretched.org. Oh, boy. Todd writes, Chris, Ken, should a person who is disqualified from ministry for divorce or adultery pursue a degree or a career in biblical counseling after genuine repentance? I think the issue is, where does biblical counseling fit in the role of elder? Is anybody confused, or does it point toward having the qualifications of an elder being a biblical counselor? Well, divorce always gets tricky. Some sort of sin in the past. When did it happen? Pre-Christian, post-Christian, all of that. I wouldn't say that it's a sin to become a biblical counselor after a whopper of a sin that has been repented of, perhaps a season, a lengthy one, longer than, say, we would give to, I don't know, somebody like Todd Bentley, that there should be a longer season where then you can become a trained biblical counselor, because you can then use that to help other people counselor. There might be some bumpers that you want to put around that, but I don't think that you could make the law and say that somebody who has sinned in the past can't be a biblical counselor. The issue of elder, I don't think that it falls underneath that umbrella. Now, should a biblical counselor at least meet the qualifications of a deacon? Probably a good idea. You're dealing with somebody's tender soul and dealing with a lot of emotional issues. So I think the congregation, in working with your pastor and with your elders, you should work through it very, very carefully. If you disagree, that has been known to happen, please send your case to idea@wretched.org, idea@wretched.org, because I don't know if you knew this, because this may sound crazy, but I'm not right about everything. There, I said it. idea@wretched.org. This is Wretched Radio.
Thank you for listening to Wretched Radio today, and thank you for sharing your wretched stories with us, like this one from the Ameds. Hello, Wretched. My wife and I have been supporting Wretched for several years now. Thank you very much. What a blessing you've been to us, and thank you for all that you do. Also, on a side note, we were able to pass out 1,000 What Time Is Purple booklets a few months ago, and by God's grace, passed out another 1,000 to students at a college today. Thank you for making them available for free. Keep striving to glorify God, the Ameds. If you'd like to share your wretched story with us, idea@wretched.org. And if you would like to help make more wretched stories like this possible, join the Ameds in supporting Wretched. Just go to wretched.org/donate and become a Wretched monthly gospel partner. They're the folks that do all the heavy lifting around here, from keeping the lights on to allowing us to develop great resources. wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Ultrasound machines save lives. Don't believe me? Then believe Dan Steiner of preborn.org.
A young woman come in, 18, with a boyfriend, and he's pushing her to abort, took her back into the ultrasound room. There's two hearts. It's twins. The father looks at that, this 19-year-old guy. He goes, I don't know what we're going to do, but I know what we're not going to do. We're not going to kill those two babies.
Ultrasounds work. When a mommy, a daddy sees a picture of their baby in the womb, 80% of the time they choose life. It is $28 per ultrasound. May I ask, how many ultrasounds could you provide? $28 per month. Please note, whilst Preborn is busy trying to save the lives of babies, they're trying to save the souls of mommies and daddies by preaching the gospel. Please consider supporting Preborn at preborn.org/wretched, preborn.org/wretched.
If you love Don't Stub Your Toe, and really who didn't, with its thorough gospel presentation, then you're going to love Wretched's newest evangelistic booklet, Are You a Rotten Fish? This booklet is perfect if you fear that someone you know is a false convert, or that there may be false converts in your church. Are You a Rotten Fish is an informative booklet about true and false conversions. In other words, wheat and tares, wise virgins and foolish virgins, good fish and rotten fish. Are You a Rotten Fish compares and contrasts the true gospel versus false gospels, the correct response of repent and trust versus, well, really all the incorrect responses. All you have to do is hop on your phone or favorite computing device and visit wretched.org/fish and order your copies today. So, who do you know who might be a rotten fish? Visit wretched.org/fish to get your copies of Are You a Rotten Fish today. That's wretched.org/fish.
Hermeneutics. Hermeneutics is the art and science of interpreting scripture. When reading the Bible, begin with these three questions. What does it say? What does it mean? What difference does it make? Many common mistakes can be avoided with basic hermeneutics. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
I'm the Penguin. This is Wretched Radio. Send your emails to idea@wretched.org. I'll leave this person's name out of it. Hi, Mr. Friel. Am I wrong to have politely told our worship leader that I think the new guy in the band is promoting a sense of irreverence when he gets on stage to play the guitar while barefoot?
Ooh, is he an electric player? Because I couldn't imagine that would feel good on your feet when you're switching the pedals.
Wow. Oh, there's that aspect. Regardless, should the person kick off his kicks? Is that the cool term these days? Take off your shoes to be playing in the worship team. And my question would be, why? Do you do that anywhere else? Why? What's the point? I would ask the fellow.
Moses.
Why do you do that? Well, you're not standing on holy ground. Now, the only way that it's holy ground is when God says that's holy ground. Otherwise, you're on some wood with some carpet. Then, yes, is it set apart? Well, at least that hour for that? Yes. But God determines what is holy, what is sanctified. Why do you have to take off your shoes to do this? What's behind? Explain the theology of this to me. And if he does use Moses, well, Moses took off his shoes. Do we see that throughout church history, that people have felt the need to do that when they're playing the organ or when they are preaching a sermon? Then maybe you should be insisting the pastor takes off his shoes too, because he's actually preaching the word. So, hey, everybody should take off. Everybody in the congregation. Do you want everybody in the congregation? See, I think that maybe this is something that we don't have biblical support for. I'd ask the person, what's going on? It's not even culturally normal. We wear shoes in public. We've kind of gotten to that level where we've got closed-toed shoes so that you don't hurt your little piggies. It's also distracting. It's so unusual. It's distracting. To use that tech. All right. I know. I'm going to use the Bible, too. I think. Uh-oh. Yeah. I think that I am not going to wear a shirt when I'm driving to church. No, I've got biblical support for this. Don't get grossed out.
Too late.
It would frighten the little children. I've got biblical. You see, when Jesus was on the shore and Peter was fishing, what did he do? What did he tell me the process of what he did to get to Jesus? What did he do?
He jumped in the water and swam.
What did he do before jumping in the water?
Does it say that he took off his tunic?
Did it say shirt
or tunic?
I'm going to see Jesus at church, therefore I'm taking off my tunic to drive on the way to
Do you wear a tunic, Todd?
It's a cultural tunic. Moses was wearing sandals. They don't have to be analogous exactly, but I think that I've got the same biblical support for not wearing a shirt on my way to see Jesus at church. You'd go, you are not using the Bible rightly. Bingo. Dear Todd, I work for a state. I'm not going to even mention which one. Oftentimes, I read dependency petitions for children in my work. Why the state is requesting children to be removed from homes to find sanctuary. In recent months, I've seen an incredible uptick in so-called transgender youth. I'm now seeing remarks in official government documents about one or more parents not being supportive of said youth's gender identity. And you can count on this more and more and more. And if you don't think that we're at the bottom of the slippery slope yet, or that there isn't a slippery slope, just you wait and see what our government could insist upon. Wait a second. You don't support your child's ability to choose their own gender or the way that they sext pictures of themselves? We'll just take it from here and we'll take them. idea@wretched.org. If a person is practicing yoga for the physical benefits and not praying to Buddha, would it not be a Christian liberty issue? It kind of depends on a lot of stuff. Don't forget, you've got to remember testimony. What does it say to anybody who's watching? Furthermore, it's not just praying to Buddha. It is an emptying of the brain. It is chanting a mantra. If any of those components are involved, I can just tell you, no. Don't be doing it. Therefore, if you strip those components, then you've stripped yoga. Yoga is not just stretching exercises. Yoga, rightly defined, is a salvific practice of the Hindu religion. It is getting in touch with the divine nothingness. It's emptying your brain to get connected to the infinite blah. That's the Hindi term for that. That is what yoga properly defined is. Now, if you want to do stretching things that happen to resemble some of the moves that they do, then it's not yoga, it's stretching. How can a Christian do that, though, in a yoga class? Can't you just find a stretching class? I mean, if those moves really help, and I think they do for some people, it really does provide some fit. Doing stretching, it's amazing how that works. God's been kind to me for like the last, maybe because I stopped playing golf and tennis. That helped a lot. But the lower back would just drive me bonkers with stuff. Stretch? Oh, it's better. It's amazing how it can help. But I wouldn't call that yoga, even if it happens to resemble some sort of that's just stretching. Find a way to stretch and just avoid the whole yoga component. There's nothing good that comes from it. Stretch. Idea at wretched.org. How do we speak or confront and challenge the pro-abortion people in love like Christ? We do it lovingly, depending on the situation. We also do it firmly. If you're talking to somebody who's considering an abortion, I think the tone starts with being loving and gentle and soft. If they're going to be persisting, you can ramp it up. I think the need will determine the tone. Remember, if you can't speak truth and love, don't do either. Find the combination. Balance it out. And you might want to get a copy of Life is Best, available at wretched.org in order to help you. Adad writes, Brett, could you please give me a guideline on how to get on a secular college to distribute What Time is Purple, available at wretched.org/purple. Look, two plugs in one. You don't need permission. You own that school, at least a little tiny part of it, because your taxes go to it. It is only a strictly private institution. I say avoid private institutions totally because, yes, even if they accept some government money, they are, in essence, open then to the public. It's just not worth the hassle. Find a government university that are owned by, you know, we the people. And you don't have to ask permission. There are two rules. Do not impede traffic and do not make such a ruckus that the kids can't do their schoolwork and hear the professor. Otherwise, you don't need permission. Now, if you want to do open-air preaching, amplification, all of that, it's probably wise to get that approved. Otherwise, you're going to get shut down. If a police officer approaches you when you're handing out copies of What Time is Purple, available at wretched.org/purple, you can simply, sir, I am so grateful for police. Please know I want to honor you in every single regard. And ultimately, I'm going to do what you tell me. But my understanding is this is public property. Can you cite the law that I am breaking for you to stop me and hinder me from going about my private citizen business? If there's a law I'm breaking, by all means, I surrender. But if not, I think that I've got legal grounds to be here. Then you will have to make the decision from there how hard you are going to push that. Wretched.org/purple if you want to hand out What Time is Purple. Remember, we will send you up to 50 copies. You pay for shipping. You pass them out. Just promise to pass them out. If you want to do a bigger whiz bang, pass out hundreds of these, thousands of these, you're going to be sending an email. Just go to wretched.org/purple. Send an email to Jen. She will get you hooked up, and we will send you cases and even pay for the shipping on that. I am not kidding. Wretched.org/purple. And, you know, as long as you're at the internet, speaking of lacking segues, as long as you're on the internet, would you please visit tomorrowclubs.org/wretched? I spent some time with Paul and Cindy Marty when I was in the Twin Cities. They are such a dear couple. They are exploding. Hmm? They're not. The ministry is. The ministry has so much opportunity to reach more people in Eastern Europe with the gospel. They just need more money. Well, that's kind of the case for every ministry, but I'm just telling you about the Tomorrow Clubs. They will set up more and more Tomorrow Clubs. They have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these little kids meeting every single week in conjunction with a local church all throughout Eastern Europe. Poor, poor, poor parts of the world. And they can just open more and more and more and more if you'd consider supporting them. It's $30 a month, 30 disciples. Tomorrowclubs.org/wretched. Tomorrowclubs.org/wretched. Idea@wretched.org. Idea@wretched.org. Todd writes, Evan, I wanted to ask about true salvation. To be saved is total surrender and submission to Christ. So after I get saved, what if I watch TV or other leisure activity? That is the question. What's the balance of how dedicated I am to the Lord and some downtime? Downtime should be used to regenerate you so you can be back in service to the Lord, even if that's your job. Remember, that's service to the Lord too. So leisure is something that God provides for. We see it in the festivals. We see it in the Sabbath. There is a time to rest. It's a reminder that we aren't God, so it's perfectly fine. Make sure it's, of course, not sinful. And then find the balance. Different seasons, different times. You're probably going to change your tune over the years, how much free time you utilize and how much you don't. It maybe depends on your energy, your strength, your health, all of those things. We don't make a law where there is no law. But just be mindful. And have I had enough rest now? Could I be doing something to expand the kingdom of God and not just take more downtime? It's very easy to justify too much lollygagging. Let's remember the windows are closing. The time is short. We have been given an order by our King to go and make disciples. That should be our primary desire, and rest should support that, not dominate our lives. In other words, it's up to you, Christian. Until tomorrow, go serve your King.